Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Environmental advocacy groups are urging New York voters to approve a state constitutional amendment. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
Proposition 1 asks New York voters to approve a state constitutional amendment that resolves issues around construction at the biathlon and Nordic ski facilities at Mount Van Hovenberg near Lake Placid, and also adds land to the Adirondack Forest Preserve. The proposition would allow the Olympic Regional Development Authority, or ORDA, to construct, operate, and maintain facilities on no more than 323 acres. To offset that, the state would be required to buy an additional 2,500 acres that would be added to the forest preserve. Protect the Adirondacks Executive Director Claudia Bramer explains why she believes the amendment is necessary.
Over the years, there has been some construction that has taken place on the forest preserve that was outside the boundaries of the Forever Wild restrictions. And so it's really necessary to have a constitutional amendment that brings Mount Van Hovenberg into compliance with Article 14.
Adirondack Council Communications Director John Sheehan says passage of the amendment will maintain the integrity of the Forever Wild Clause and help delineate what is and is not legal at Mount Van Hovenberg.
ORDA had done some things in the past that were not constitutionally proper, and we had asked them to clean those up with a constitutional amendment, and they agreed to do that.
The amendment requires the state to obtain 2,500 acres of land to counterbalance ORDA continuing to use facilities on the 323 acres. Bramer says it is not a land swap.
It's compensating the Forest Preserve for the fact that these 323 acres are not going to be managed totally as wild forest anymore, but the 2,500 acres will be managed in full compliance with Article 14 as Forever Wild. The 2,500 acres has not yet been identified. It could be anywhere inside the blue line, and it has to be valued at a similar amount or more than the 323 acres. But we do hope it'll be adjacent to some other forest preserve.
The proposed constitutional amendment, which has not seen robust opposition ahead of Election Day, begins with, quote, notwithstanding the foregoing provisions, unquote. Bramer is concerned that voters will not understand the ballot language and will then not vote on the measure.
It's not anything scary. We hope people will flip their ballot over and vote yes, because it really is to respect the integrity of Article 14 and compensate the forest preserves, and we need it to go through.
Sheehan explains what will happen if this constitutional amendment fails.
If they don't have permission to use the trails and the biathlon target or any of the trailside snowmaking equipment they've installed there, it would have to come out. This use amendment essentially would allow the Olympic Authority to use this portion of the forest preserve for as long as it was needed for this Olympic training facility. And once that facility is not needed anymore in that location, this could revert back to wild forest again.
Article 14 of the New York Constitution states, quote, the lands of the state now owned or hereafter acquired, constituting the forest preserve as now fixed by law, shall be forever kept as wild forest lands, unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Frontrunner Zohran Mamdani was attacked over his thin resume. Republican Curtis Sliwa strove to prove his seriousness as a candidate, and former Governor Andrew Cuomo was pressed on the sexual harassment allegations that drove him from office in a contentious final debate in New York City's mayoral race this week. The candidates met just days before early voting was set to begin in the country's largest city. While Mamdani began the debate accusing his rivals of being too consumed by fighting, he quickly joined the fray, including saying one of the women who had accused Cuomo of sexual harassment, his former aide Charlotte Bennett, was in the audience.
You sought to access her private gynecological records. She cannot speak up for herself because you lodged a defamation case against her. I, however, can speak. What do you say to the 13 women that you sexually harassed?
Cuomo denied wrongdoing and chided Mamdani.
If you want to be in government, then you have to be serious and mature. There were allegations of sexual harassment. They were then went to five district attorneys, fully litigated for 4 years. The cases were dropped, right? You know that as a fact. So everything you just stated, you just said, was a misstatement.
Bennett was the second woman to accuse Cuomo of sexual harassment, alleging he subjected her to invasive questions about her personal life and sexual relationships. Cuomo denies Bennett's allegations. Cuomo is now running as an independent after losing the Democratic primary to Mamdani. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with Avery Stemple, co-president of New Yorkers for Mental Health Alternatives. It's an organization which has proposed legislation to make psilocybin-containing mushrooms legal. I asked Avery to update us on the legislation.
Well, there are four bills right now that are under consideration. One was introduced by Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal, and that is a decriminalization bill that includes psilocybin-containing mushrooms and also other natural substances. Pat Burke and Senator Natalia Fernandez, they have proposed two bills, one of which creates a facilitator center type situation that has already rolled into effect in Colorado and Oregon, and a companion bill to that that would authorize veterans, first responders, and people suffering from cluster headaches to get access to those facilitated experiences. And then Amy Paulin, Assemblymember Amy Paulin, who is the chair of the Health Committee, and Senator Julia Salazar have introduced A2142 and S5303, and that creates more of a permit-style system that would approve consumers' use at home or through a facilitated center, and allows for home cultivation as well as buying from approved cultivators. So there's a variety of ways that people can get access.
Now, that's the state level we're talking about. In New York State, of course, you have the feds. Now, when it comes to cannabis, you know, there was the Cole memo where they sort of agreed to lay off whatever the states passed and not bust people for it, let's say in New York where it's legal. Is that something that's built into your bills? Are you concerned about that? Is it still too early to worry about that? Where are we?
Well, the feds are their own machine. And as you mentioned, the Cole memo told federal bureaus to basically have a hands-off approach for cannabis. No such thing exists for psilocybin-containing mushrooms.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But I assume that would be something you would like to see if that happens in New York.
That's correct. But at the federal level, there is movement to reschedule psilocybin-containing mushrooms, at least to Schedule 2. And there is a bill already on the books that has been approved and signed into law that if the feds reschedule anything, then New York State will immediately follow suit.
Oh, interesting.
So if the feds do reschedule psilocybin-containing mushrooms, New York will follow. Now, going from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 does not necessarily increase consumer access. It just allows for greater ease for research and studying capacity.
Interesting, interesting. We're speaking with Avery Stemple, co-president of New Yorkers for Mental Health Alternatives. That's NYMHA. How do they seek you out?
So people can go to our website. We also have a regular monthly meeting on the second Tuesday of every month that happens in person at Indian Ladder Farms, and we always have some cider donuts. And I usually will make a non-active mushroom tea that has chaga, reishi, lion's mane, but it's also available through Zoom. So our organization spans the entire state, and people do join from Long Island to Buffalo, and that Zoom link is available in our link in our bio on Instagram, but it's also on our website.
What's the website?
NYMHA.com.
Avery Stemple, co-president of New Yorkers for Mental Health Alternatives, is joining us on the Capital Connection this week. I'm David Giustina. Now, Avery, you told me something that I hadn't heard before, and I want to bring this into the discussion, which is synthesized psilocybin. And you say there's a push now among one of the largest companies to use synthesized psilocybin rather than natural psilocybin. How is that impacting things?
Well, that's correct, David. So essentially, the studies that have happened so far in the United States have, for the most part, used a synthesized psilocybin product. Now, that can be easily manufactured and regulated, and, you know, it's all produced in a lab. What that doesn't allow for is the entourage of other components that are in the mushrooms. So most researchers are looking at psilocybin, which is one of the active molecules. There's also psilocin, which psilocybin converts to inside the body before it hits the serotonin receptors. But there's also components called like baocystin and cystin and different things that are in the mushroom that haven't necessarily been looked at so closely yet. And as a result, we just don't know what impact not using all of the mushroom is going to have on people's ability to utilize it as a healing tool. And if we only allow synthesized psilocybin in New York State as a product to be consumed, then we don't allow access to farmers to benefit from being able to produce this naturally occurring crop. So personally, as a mushroom farmer, I am arguing for allowing both substances, both the natural mushroom and the synthesized product, for people to consume.
And I would imagine, Avery Stemple, that as a piece of information valuable to lawmakers in terms of making a decision, it would be, how can we help New York's farmers? This has been a big issue. It's been an issue with cannabis when they've gotten shortchanged in many respects on that issue. So farmers, it would seem to me, would be a big linchpin in their decisions, these politicians' decisions, to make sure they include that in the law.
Yeah, absolutely. And through our farm work, we are in the New York Farm Bureau, and the New York Farm Bureau has already approved language in their policy book acknowledging psilocybin-containing mushrooms as a potential upcoming crop for New York farmers.
That's Avery Stemple, co-president of New Yorkers for Mental Health Alternatives. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. Last weekend, on Saturday, millions across the nation turned out for the second nationwide protest referred to as No Kings, meant to push back on moves by President Donald Trump and his administration. In Albany, people from all backgrounds showed up to make their voices heard and protest what many called an authoritarian takeover. The Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons was there.
The gatherings are meant to protest the actions of the Trump administration, which rallygoers say has cut social benefits and reined in constitutionally guaranteed rights. The first event, organized by hundreds of progressive organizations across the country, was held June 14th. In New York's capital, thousands lined the streets with signs, costumes, and decorated vehicles. Albany protesters called moves by the administration unlawful power grabs and say the administration's policies are unprecedented. Adisha Ekaniaki Weber became a naturalized U.S. citizen 5 years ago. He says if he weren't already naturalized, he might have thought twice about becoming a U.S. citizen. He He says the Trump administration is disregarding due process for law and order in the nation.
We all need to come out and protest it, because if it is true that, you know, maybe they come for our neighbors today, but of course they'll come for us the next day, right? So we got to come out here and make our voices heard, and that's why I'm here.
The rallies came as the federal government enters its fourth week of shutdown. Republicans and Democrats are at a standstill on an agreement that would reopen the government, with Democrats lobbying for the extension of Affordable Care Act subsidies that could increase premiums for millions of Americans if they expire. Poosenbear, who says they changed their name legally, was born intersex. Earlier this year, Trump issued an executive order that would require U.S. passports to list the biological sex of the carrier at birth, only recognizing two sexes, male and female. Bear says for people like them, it's not as simple as an F or M marker to delineate sex.
I was both hormonally, now I'm neither. I can't get appropriate health care, let alone being denied the right to even exist. Officially, you'd have to call me an O.
Protesting from a wheelchair, Bear says the Trump administration's attacks on health care is gross. Bear says it doesn't matter who is to blame for the government shutdown. Americans need their health care.
I can't stand all the denial, the lack of humanity, the lack of Christianity, the lack of spirituality. I mean, it's gross. It's learned helplessness.
Many protesters say while they're thankful to live in a blue state like New York, they have to stay on their toes. In a post on X Saturday, Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul, an outspoken critic of Trump, thanked all New Yorkers who protested peacefully, saying, quote, New York hasn't labored under a king in more than 200 years, and we're not about to start now, unquote. Trump spoke on Fox Business Friday night ahead of the rallies, saying he's not a king. But on social media Saturday, he posted an AI-generated video of him in a fighter jet with King Trump plastered on the side, dumping what appeared to be excrement on protesters.
Can I get on the bus with you guys? I'm a reporter for NPR.
Katie Bonesteel was driving a minibus filled with friends along the city's Western Avenue, which was backed up for several miles in both directions as protesters hung out of their cars holding signs and clanging cowbells. I hopped in the bus and rode about half a mile with the women. Bonesteel, an Albany resident, says she and her friends took to the road to stand up for the country they love and call home.
Fundamentally, if you care about if you care and want to continue to live in the United States as it was intended to be when it was founded, you would take the time to educate yourself and understand that supporting the Republican Party, who is the party of Donald Trump, means that you are supporting the end of America as it was founded and the ideas of democracy.
But the event wasn't all chants and picket signs. Many wore costumes, had musical instruments, and flags from many countries and social movements. Some drummers' drums bore the No King symbol, a crossed-out crown, while others wore T-shirts that bore the slogan, using music as a way to bring rally-goers together in a time of uncertainty for many Americans. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Welcome back to part two of our conversation with the SUNY New Paltz faculty advisor and head of the Legislative Gazette newspaper, Darren Johnson, and two student reporters, Nancy McGillis and Benjamin Nellis. Last week, we talked about how the Legislative Gazette newspaper was a precursor to the Legislative Gazette radio show, how the paper educates college students, even turning out some Pulitzer Prize winners, and the fact that after a hiatus from publication, the program is back. Speaking of, welcome back, Darren, Nancy, and Benjamin.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Now, we spoke with you last week, Nancy, so this week, let's begin with Benjamin Nellis. Benjamin, where are you in your educational career? Same question. And, you know, why the Gazette? And you're, of course, as you told me, also off mic, very interested in radio, whether it's engineering or editing or any form of it. So give the listeners here a chance to know who you are.
Yeah, thank you so much. So again, I'm Benjamin Nellis. I'm a senior at SUNY New Paltz. I'm actually only a couple months away from graduation. This is my very last semester. I transferred over. I used to do it at Hudson Valley. I'm a digital media management major, minor in journalism and communication. So really what I've been trying to do is I've been trying to be, like, well-rounded. Like, I know I like media, I know I like news, and I know I like journalism, and I find all these different fields, and I don't know what I'm going into, because right now the future is very close to me, and I don't know what it looks like yet. So I've been trying to well-round myself as best as I can, get my foot in as many things, in as many doors as possible, meet as many people, do as many things, make videos, write essays, do speeches, all sorts of stuff, anything I can do to get a broader perspective, become more well-rounded. Journalism is, you know, the news has been something that's been on my mind a lot, for good and for bad. And I think that people having access to information, especially those, you know, who like need access to public radio or public news, I think it's vital. I think the idea of the Fourth Estate is critical. So being part of that is something that really spoke to me. And when I saw the Legislative Gazette as an opportunity to actually be in the Capitol where, you know, politics happen, where these things, these decisions are made that affect people across the state or in my county, in my town, or, you know, at a larger, more national level in some cases. The fact that all that can happen here and I am so close to it is really exciting. But also just, I haven't published that much print journalism before. I'm a little bit new to it. I've done other stuff, but I haven't done specifically journalism. So when I saw this opportunity to get my foot in the door and to, like, meet these people, to write these stories, to produce these podcasts, to do whatever it is I'll be doing, it really excited me.
Yeah, and quite frankly, the idea that you're doing this now is another statement that I often make to students, which is it's never too late to do that internship, to get more involved in the area that you're interested in, to find out that you're capable of doing something new. And by sewing this all together now with this internship, it can only help you, Benjamin, in terms of having those clips from your article, having a podcast that you can play for a potential employer. Those kind of things are so valuable. And, you know, to have the proactiveness that you're engaged in other words, you're not reacting. You're actively seeking opportunities to make yourself more knowledgeable and potentially more successful. That is required no matter what institution you go to, whether it's New Paltz or community college, because it's you in the end that is responsible for education and educating yourself. The professors can only do so much. And let's get back to Darren Johnson for a second. That's the other part of this, right? I mean, you're going to help these young people hopefully begin new careers in this field, something that we sorely need right now.
Yeah, you know, I try to, you know, reinforce with them that you need bullet points, tangible bullet points on your resume. You need things that you've accomplished. And both of these students here today are very good closers. They're good at closing the deal and getting those tangible accomplishments. A lot of students don't. And maybe if they don't have that practical experience and someone who's playing the role of editor and not professor or, you know, some kind of leadership position in media, maybe they'll never get that in their 4 years of college, and then they'll wonder, you know, why they're not competing well after they graduate. So it's really important for them to get those tangibles on their resume. And one of your staff here also mentioned apply for awards, win some awards in the field as well. I think that helped me a lot as a young journalist. It helped boost my confidence, and it gave me something to talk about with other media people in interviews.
The other thing that you mentioned to me in our conversations, Darren Johnson, was that the Legislative Gazette wants to have a wire service eventually.
Yeah, we want to create something called LG Wire, and I've already gotten interest. There's a SUNY-wide group of journalism educators, and they're trying to do what I'm doing, make everything more practical. And I've brought up the idea in our Zoom calls of having LG Wire, Legislative Gazette Wire, where anyone who writes about anything of statewide interest and they're a college student or have a college affiliation can get on our wire and this would provide news to all corners of the state. So because we're in the Capitol, we're bumping into legislators from Buffalo, from Long Island, et cetera. And we can write that story for Buffalo, Long Island, Plattsburgh, et cetera, because we're right here. We can change leads around so that the story might be specific to a particular area. It could be a trend story in a particular part of the state that also has statewide implications like pollution or, you know, the environment or something like that. But we're going to start accepting those stories and putting those stories out there. So that's going to be one of our goals, too.
Yeah. And, you know, as we look forward now in all of this, if you're listening out there and you're hearing what Darren is saying and you're working for a SUNY or you're interested in partnering, how do they get in touch? How can people get involved with this if it's possible?
Sure. We're affiliated with New Paltz, SUNY New Paltz. So it's Legislative Gazette at newpaltz.edu, Legislative Gazette at newpaltz.edu. And I'll respond. You know, send me any ideas you might have.
And I can vouch for him. He responds very quickly. I really appreciate that. That was Darren Johnson, faculty member at SUNY New Paltz, editor of the Gazette, and bringing that paper back where I think it belongs as one of the hubs of the New York State Capitol for journalism. Thank you to both Benjamin Nellis and Nancy McGinnis. You guys are special, and I'm so glad to have met you and hope we'll continue to work together in ways in the future. And all I can say is much success to all of you. We'll hopefully come back and maybe in the future update with some students on the Gazette as well. More to come, everyone. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2543. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.